Hola, my name is Elias Torres, host of the American Dream Podcast. On this show, I talk to underrepresented founders and seasoned executives who have achieved their versions of the American Dream. We discover their origin stories, their career trajectories, and their biggest lessons learned. In this episode, I speak with Arturo Nunez, former marketing leader for companies like Nubank, Apple, Nike, the NBA. Like me, Arturo was part of En-ROADS Programming College, and now he's paying it forward. In addition to operating as a marketing consultant, serving on the boards of major brands, and owning a club in Miami, Arturo sets aside time to mentor the next generation of underrepresented individuals, paving their way into corporate America. We will discuss all of this and more, so let's get into it. Thank you, Arturo, for being here. Nice to meet you.
Hey, nice to meet you, Elias. Pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Arturo Nunez, tell us a little bit where you're from, where's the background, where's the sauce here from?
So, Elias, born and raised in New York City, in Harlem, New York. My parents were Cuban and Venezuelan immigrants who came to New York City in the 50s and met there. They were married for over 60 years. I recently lost my mother at the age of 99, about 6 months ago. I lost my father at the age of 99, 2 years ago. So I'm going to 120. I got the genes to go to 120. Easy, no problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Take some of that Brian Johnson stuff and you're good.
Exactly. No, but, raising a Latino household, my parents both had strong cultural identity from Cuba and Venezuela. So I was raised, with the cuisine, the music, the history, all the vibes from Cuban and Venezuelan culture, and had the opportunity to travel to both Cuba and Venezuela and get to know relatives, and a lot of relatives lived in New York and stuff. So that was kind of my upbringing. And at the time, I lived in Harlem. And at that time, I tell people the story all the time. The taxi cabs in New York had a map in the back of the cab of Manhattan. And this obviously before the Uber age and all that. That map ended at 96th Street. Above 96th Street was other. We lived in other land.
Wow.
Yeah, we lived in other land. But what was really cool about that is, other land was Cuban, Dominican, Puerto Rican, Venezuelan, Colombian, Panamanian, Haitian, Jamaican, African-American. That was the vibe of town. And somehow we figured out how to all coexist in that environment. And what that required was cultural IQ, You needed to understand that your bodega guy was Dominican and the cuchifrito guy was Puerto Rican, and understand the food from Colombia and understand Jamaican cuisine, and all of that stuff really informed my upbringing. And it was a really beautiful place to be at the time.
Absolutely. It's just something that I think make our culture so special, right? It's in a way, I'm a little jealous, right? Because I bet you got the moves, right? And, you got all the Afro-Latin, you got Cuba, I cannot even imagine, you got Venezuela. I kind of sucked at I went to the United States when I was 11, and I missed the parties where people were starting learning the salsa right there. But I'm Latino true and true, but
You still move when you hear it. You have to.
Oh, no. I mean, I love Luis Enrique. I love everybody. I love Mark Anthony. You name it, right? But Celia Cruz, of course, everybody, right?
I was thinking about all that, man. Those were the parties in my living room as a kid. And, it was very different back then. Today, parents kind of live for their kids. And back then, parents were like their own entity. They were having their parties. And we would sit in a room in an apartment in Manhattan, in Harlem. We'd sit in a room on a bed, not like this, none like this one. 20 kids. No PlayStation, no little controller, no nothing. Just sitting there on a pile of coats, waiting for the party to end so we could go home. And the parties lasted a long time. And we were lucky if somebody brought in a tray of pastelitos at midnight so we could have something to chew on, because they were in there having a ball, listening to the music that you just mentioned. Celia Cruz, Fania All-Stars, Luis Enrique, Hector Lavoe, you name it, all that amazing music. So we got to hear through the wall that it was what a great party sounded like.
I watched that. There's a Latin jazz documentary, like an older one.
Yeah.
About what was happening in New York.
Right? Oh, Latin thing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It was, and the Buena Vista Social Club. And it's like that stuff is just next level. I'm just a nerd with AI and computers,
I have to remind people this. I own a club here in Miami. We'll get into that. I own a music listening room in Miami called Dante's Hi-Fi. It's really popular. We do salsa nights sometimes. And I have to remind people that that music was not only significant because it was excellent, it was amazing music, but those people were the first Latino superheroes we ever knew. We were supposed to be marginalized. We were supposed to be other. It was supposed to be possible for us. These guys were superstars.
Yeah.
And they acted like it, and they looked like it, and they sounded like it. Those were our first Latino superheroes, you know?
Well, but I think the Black connection, right, to jazz, to the Puerto Ricans, to the Cubans, and that it was like a transfusion, right? From like a Louis Armstrong, right, to like the Dizzy Gillespie, to all these guys, to Tito, right? And I was just like, and it just happened in like basements in Harlem. It was just like, right?
That was Dizzy Gillespie inventing Kubop, right? Like, it was the mashup. Like, that stuff is good. How do we fuse it with this? And we took from each other in the Palladium. We took the dances from each other. We learned each other's dances. We dated each other's ladies. It was crazy. You know what I mean? It was a real vibe.
I'm so jealous. Like, yeah, my life is pretty boring. My life is like a computer in a garage, you know, in LA. And I was like just working in it, learning Lotus 1, 2, 3. And you know, there was no Dizzy Gillespie. There was no ladies. There was nothing. So let me start over.
That's all right. It's all part of the experience. It's all part of the cultural experience.
You grew up in nowhere land, right? And no first generation college, right? Tell us a little bit about that. You go to college.
Yeah,
I see some here in LinkedIn. You're like, it says here like agricultural school, blah blah. Where was this?
Yeah. So I went to school at a university called Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida. It was a predominantly African American institution. Yeah. Very proud graduate of that institution. And it really changed my life, man. It was the first time that I went someplace where, you know, my parents knew that.
I don't know this, right? But I know the HBCUs. But so there's a lot of Latinos that go to the schools, too, in general?
There are some Latinos that go to the schools, too. There's all kinds of people. There's some Latinos, but primarily African-American. But, you know, that was the first place that I ever went to. My parents knew that education was important in America. So they put me in private schools. They put me in Catholic schools. Florida A&M was the first time I got to a place where the smartest kid in the class was Black, the dumbest kid in the class was Black, and so was the teacher. And I was like, oh, wow. All of a sudden, that wasn't a thing anymore. It wasn't like, what's the Black kid going to say? That wasn't a thing anymore. Everybody was Black, and it was a place that was pervasive Black excellence, right? From the instruction, the professors, the systems, the students, the backgrounds of the students all over the country. It was really a magical experience, man. It really informed my life. I would say that's one of the two critical things that really informed my life and changed my life. The other one was walking into a room at the age of 16 and seeing an Afro-Latino man named Miguel Cardona in a business suit speaking articulately. He led a program called Inroads.
Oh, my God. I'm Inroads.
Yeah, I'm an Inroads kid. I interned at Johnson & Johnson. Yep.
I was in 1995, I joined Inroads.
Oh, look at that. So I met Miguel Cardona, the executive director for Inroads Northern New Jersey in New York. And I saw that man. I walked into that room and he looked like me. He was an Afro-Latino. He had a business suit on. He had a funny, weird name like mine, Miguel Cardona. I was Arturo Nunez. And I was like, whatever that guy does, I want to do that. And that was the first time that I saw Black Latino excellence in a corporate environment. That's what made me decide that I wanted to be a corporate guy.
I'm gonna cry. I mean, I think my guy was Robert Boyd.
How about that?
And so Robert Boyd came to the high school, talked to us. I applied and I got accepted, and I was thrilled. I was working for Bank of America.
Look at that.
And I would buy this. They would teach me how to dress, right? So they were like, you know, look at me now, right? I'm like this, you know, I got the hoodie. But back then they were like, go to JCPenney. I had these ties that were this thick ties with the white t-shirt, the baggy pants, and like the shittiest brown shoes. But they were like, you gotta dress up. Okay, on Saturdays we had to go to get trained, and says it's like act like a lady type of thing, act like, you know, like a gentleman, get like finishing school, right?
I showed up to my first Inroads meeting. They had to wear a suit. I had a cotler suit. Remember the cotler suit with the short jacket, the baggy pants, pointy shoes, a really rare thin tie with the gold clasp underneath the tie.
The difference between your style and my style, like, I was wearing like the grandfather stuff. You were coming in like dapper,
like a bootlegger from Harlem. They were like, no, bro, no, I see.
What was that movie, The Mask, with Ace Ventura? You were showing up like The Mask, like flavor, like it's like crazy.
The Mask zoot suit. They were like,
and Miguel goes, go back home. This is not a party here.
I see, mijo. No. Let's change it up.
Go to JCPenney. Go look like Elias.
JCPenney, get yourself a fat tie. Take the gold link off. You're good.
It's the ugliest patterns I can imagine. Like, I remember it clearly. I can see that tie.
Yeah.
And then I was ironing my shirts. He just taught me this stuff. So
we learned how to read the newspaper, the Wall Street Journal. We learned how to understand stocks. We learned how to, you know, in Florida A&M, the business school there had a program called professional development that did a lot of the same things that Inroads did.
Yeah.
I didn't have a father that was in corporate America. I didn't have uncles that could teach me. Right? So we had to learn that somewhere. There was a famous book, I'll never forget it, called The Ropes to Skip and The Ropes to Know. And it was about all the rules in corporate America no one tells you about. And if you're not informed by those, they can derail you, you know? Dude, yeah. I remember making mistakes. Elias, I remember getting a corporate credit card for the first time and thinking like,
I
could use it for whatever.
I was a little better than that, but I remember like I was like expenses, you can submit them at IBM. I was like, I had a phone card, a calling card. I had like, I was more like, I was super shy, not shy, but I was super responsible, right?
Yeah.
I was always like, I always saw things like that from the day my mother gave me like a house key. I was like, I have this thing where like I like responsibility.
But you know, Elias, you don't know what you don't know, right?
So yeah, 1,000%.
I remember my first business trip, I was with J&J and I was so young that they had to sign for me to be able to rent a car because I was too young to rent a car. And the trip was to Chicago, to a trade fair in Chicago, where I was literally just gonna man a booth and talk about the products and give literature out, whatever. But I remember coming home and telling my parents that I got this business trip to Chicago, you know? And my parents were very stone-faced, and I thought that was really weird. I thought they'd be excited. I was excited, right? Whatever. And I had dinner that night in my house, and I went to my room. My mother came into my room late night, like 11 o'clock at night, and she said, Mijo, I want to tell you something. I said, what's up? She's like, you know, we're really proud of you. This thing that you're doing with this Inroads, we don't understand all of it, but this Inroads, this job, and Johnson & Johnson, that's amazing, whatever. But, man, we can't afford to send you to Chicago. We don't have the money for that. And I was like, Mommy, no, it's a business trip. Like, they pay for everything. And they're like, oh, okay, got it. You know, they didn't understand what a business trip was.
Yeah, of course.
Well, how are we going to pay for you to go to Chicago? Like, we can't do it. No, it's covered. They take care of it. It's a business trip.
It's crazy. So I mean, to this day, right? To this day, I'm a founder multiple time and stuff like that. And I'm like, it's like, okay, we're going to fly everybody in the team to Park City to hang out. And I'm like, all right, we're spending money. I guess we're going to, because as a business owner, I'm like, we're flying everybody and we're like Airbnb. So I still have that, like the ghetto, like the cheap, the cognizant, the frugal. I'm like, so I called a buddy. He's like the president of SVB Capital. And I said to him, hey, I'm bringing my company to Park City. Can we stay at your house? He has a big house. So I was like saving money. This is in February, right? I raised $12 million from Sequoia.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, I'm still have that thing. Like, I don't want to be wasteful, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Especially with other people's money. But.
So much learning, man. Florida A&M was the first place, I say this all the time, it's really important. It was the first educational environment where I was celebrated versus tolerated. That made all the difference in the world. Something that was planned, designed, created for people like me to succeed and thrive and learn in a welcoming environment. It was really beautiful.
I'm at a point in my life where I don't give a fuck. You know, yeah. I'm going to be myself and I don't need to change for anyone. And you're going to get full Latino here every time, everywhere you go.
Listen, Elias, here's the secret, bro. You can't be anybody else. Everybody else is taken.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yourself and leaning into who you are, what makes you unique, that's what's going to make you successful. Yeah. I have a book coming out on Simon Schuster called The Culture Compass, and it's literally that. It's a practical guide to navigating corporate America without losing your soul. And I talk about how to lean into the unique culture that makes you special. The thing people are going to make you memorable, things people are going to remember when you leave that room. You know what I mean? They try to, you know, corporate America tries to make you conform and be like everybody else. And then it says, well, we don't need you. You're like everybody else. No, no. I'm not conforming. I'm me. And I have something unique to bring to the table. And that special sauce can be helpful to the enterprises I'm trying to support. And at the same time is what makes me special and unique.
And I'm looking at your resume. So impressive. And you're on the consumer side. I'm a B2B. So you're like, you know, we want to steal from how you market.
Yeah.
Because B2B tech is just boring AF. You know what I mean?
Listen, at the end of the day, I think marketing, you know, at its core, any great marketer will tell you, marketing is about storytelling. How do you tell compelling stories that make people feel emotionally connected to brands, to products, to experiences, to services? This is what the best companies in the world do. I tell the story about there being, you know, millions of people in the world that have the Nike logo tattooed on their body. That's insane. Why would someone do that with a corporate mark, with a logo? That's insane. That's how strongly they feel about the brand. Every day I drive on the streets, I see, you know, thousands of people, hundreds of people, cars that have the Apple logo, a sticker on their car. Who puts a corporate sticker on their car? Have you ever seen a Microsoft sticker on a car, a Dell sticker, Intuit? Never. Not once. NVIDIA sticker? Not once. Why do they put the Apple logo on their car? They feel that strongly about their connection to that brand, that company, that ecosystem, those products. That's what great marketing does.
Speaking of that, I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to brag here, like humble brag. But there's a guy from Venezuela used to work for us at Drift. Okay. Like 100% Venezuelan. And we had such a brand for a B2B company. And we were using the lightning bolt from the emoji. Mm. And so that kind of became our brand. So it's a Drift. And it had it kind of looked like an AC/DC logo.
Yep. Remember that.
I don't know why. We were partying one time. And then he says, if we hit this goal, I'm going to tattoo myself the lightning bolt. So like, you know, we had a brand. We had one guy. One guy did it. I think maybe.
Brand love, man. That's brand love. It's a talk track that I use a lot when I do public speaking. I talk about brand love, the power of brand love. That's what Nike and Apple and these great companies have done, is create brand love. And once you have it, it allows you to even make mistakes as a company, and customers will still be loyal to you. You know what I mean? The power of that love. It's bigger than the products. It's bigger than the services. It's a feeling that we represent the same thing. We believe in the same things.
We can do two things. I can ask you to tell me stories about Nubank Brazil, right? We're talking about Nubank is like one of the biggest unicorns in out of Latin America, Brazil. Sequoia invested in it, right? Big fan of them.
Yep.
Or we can do a session and you can teach me about marketing for my company, right?
We can do both of those. Let's do Nubank. So, man, I was effectively retired from corporate America after a long run with a lot of great companies, and I was off doing passion projects in the hospitality space, doing public speaking, launching this book, doing a bunch of things, doing some consulting. I consulted for the NFL, I consulted for Nextdoor, for a bunch of brands. And then I got a call, I got three calls in 1 week. I got a call from Live Nation about a chief branding officer. I got a call from HBO Latin America about a head of marketing for Latin America. And I got a call from this company I never heard of before called Nubank. And they told me their story about how they wanted to be the bank of the people in Brazil and Mexico and Colombia. And I spent time working in those marketplaces, particularly Brazil, a place that I really fell in love with. And I was like, man, you know what? I would love to try to bring financial services to a group of underrepresented, underappreciated, right, customers, you know, in Latin America. And I said, if you really are talking about being the bank of the people, then I'm all for that. And I joined the company as a CMO. We were hurtling towards an IPO at the time. We IPO'd at a $46 billion valuation on the New York Stock Exchange. And it was an incredible run. I took the company. When I joined the company, there were 30 million customers at Nubank Brazil. When I left, there were 80 million customers. It was the number one brand in Brazil. Not the number one bank, not the number one fintech, the number one brand in Brazil. And that was really working with an incredible team to tell culturally relevant stories to a population that was underserved and unappreciated. We told stories to regular people in Mexico, Brazil, and Colombia, and told them we were there to make their lives better. And we told that in culturally resonant ways, and it really brought people along. By the way, think about banking. How many people love their bank? Nobody. I have relationships with Chase, with Citibank, with Bank of America, you name it. No love. People really love Nubank. They love Nubank because they will believe in what Nubank stands for. You know, we were doing some this marketing shoot, commercial shoot, in Salvador, Brazil. And we asked a woman that was in the cast, you know, she was a regular person that was cast to play a role. What does Nubank mean for you? And she said something. I'm going to say it in Portuguese, then I'll translate it. She said, Nubank é finança sem enrolação.
Without regulation?
No, sin rollos. Sin rollos. ¿Por qué tiene que ser complicado? Sin rollos. It's not complicated.
Complicación.
Complicaciones. Sin complicaciones. Sin complicaciones. Why does banking have to be complicated?
Wait, so you speak, you're fluent in Portuguese?
Oh, I'm fluent in Portuguese. Dude, Elias, I'm a shark on Shark Tank Brazil, my guy.
Wow.
Yeah. I speak Portuguese fluently.
Wow, that's awesome. I want to speak Portuguese. Yeah.
It's a beautiful language, and I fell in love with it, and I picked up the language, I have professors, etc. But yeah, I speak fluently, and I got invited last year to be a shark on Shark Tank in Brazil, so I did that, and I'm going back again this year, and I invested in two companies and all that, so love my experience in Brazil, love that country, super passionate about the people, the culture, everything.
Yeah.
A great experience to work for Nubank and be able to tell stories to make people emotionally connected to that brand.
It's very different than Latin America. It's very different.
I think there are some similarities, but I think the idea of family identity.
Yeah, no, it's similar, but I'm saying, but it's there's a unique, like, I think, like, all the Latin Americans were much closer to each other.
Great.
The Brazilian are more unique.
Yeah,
they definitely have such a beautiful mix, right, in that country.
Yeah,
that creates like a magical perspective. I'm in love.
You know, Elias, one of the things that people ask me all the time from all of my work in Latin America, they were like, "Hey, man, what are your favorite places in Latin America?" And I always answer that question like, "Man, what's a tough question? I've had a lot of fun in a lot of different places, met a lot of amazing people, and I'm always like, oh man, you know, I really love Brazil, right? Passionate about Brazil. I feel like I have some other kind of spiritual connection to Brazil. So that's the thing, Brazil. But I love Colombia, and I love Panama, and I love Puerto Rico, and I love Dominican Republic, and I love Cuba, of course, right? And then I pulled back and I started to think about what those places had in common. You know what those places have in common, Elias? African culture is what those places have in common. The root of a lot of the things that make the culture go in all those places that I named comes from Africa. And I think that is a powerful source.
Yeah. You know, you didn't name Argentina.
And by the way, no hate on my porteños. I fuck with Argentina. I like Argentina's dope.
Yeah, I know, of course. No, but we got to make fun of them. But yeah, no, whatever.
You can't. They're the greatest.
Yeah. It's like in Argentina's no, but we love them. No, I'm actually going to Argentina in August.
Beautiful.
They got good meat. They got good meat.
Good meat. They got good meat.
You said that people put you in a box. Why would anybody put you in a box? There's no box that can contain you, my man.
Yo, man, that's the way that people operate. That's the way. Listen, I used to, check this out. True story. I used to watch people, when I was sitting in corporate, I'd watch people like Pharrell Williams or watch people like Virgil Abloh. I'm like, wow, he's the creative director of Louis Vuitton. It's a French company. But there he is DJing a party in New York. That's so crazy. Yo, Elias, I've become that guy. I'm sitting in a board meeting at Estee Lauder or Abercrombie and Fitch, and the next day I'm in my own nightclub in Miami playing records, DJing in my place. Why? Because I love it. Why? Because I'm good at it. Why? Because it's my culture. I cannot be boxed. Yes, I am a corporate executive. Yes, I am a board member. Yes, I am a marketing executive. All of that and more. Yes, I am a father and a husband, right? All of these things matter to me equally. I'm not going to be pigeonholed into a box. I believe that you're only limited by your own imagination as far as what you can do. And I still got more things that I want to do before I'm done.
I was just talking to my daughter about this. She's close to graduating from Northeastern Computer Science, but she's like, I like fashion. Maybe I should go into fashion tech. And we were talking about, what do you want to be? And she's like, Pharrell. And I'm like, Pharrell is like, that's like.
I love that answer. That's a great answer.
And then I was like, holy shit. Like, you understand who this guy is, right? I mean, like, and then he's like, well, he doesn't have that. I'm like, no, let's look him up. She's like, He's never owned like a, you know, like he owned the some clothing company, the Brothers or something. What is it called? Yeah. And so I'm like, I was like, relax, dude. You don't just show up there. You know, these guys are insane. But and like Childish Gambino, right? Like this creativity and the range. And I'm.
All of that and more is possible for your daughter, bro. All that and more is possible for your daughter. You know, 100%. I had a friendship with Kobe Bryant, rest in peace. He became a personal friend when I worked with him at Nike. And he said, Arturo, when I first started playing basketball, I sucked. I just put in the work. I dedicated myself to craftsmanship of the sport. I dedicated myself to obsessing the details of the sport that I loved because I wanted to be the greatest. And that's all it takes. You can look, do what you want to do if you commit yourself to it.
Look, I'm never going to be you. But you know what? For me, coming out of here, I'm friends with the Pharrell, Latino Pharrell. I'm like golden. I'm coming to Miami. I'm calling you. Here, give me the number. Make sure. I want to be at your club with you, and I'm gonna be like, you know, whatever I can.
Yes, my friend. Thank you for taking the time. We need to talk more. I would love to talk to you about brand for your particular
absolutely
products that you have. I'm always trying to pay it forward. Something you mentioned in the beginning, pay it forward. One of the things that I do a lot is mentorship, right? Yeah. And that guy, Miguel Cardona from Inroads, he died of a brain hemorrhage in his early 40s. So I wrote him a letter to thank him for what he meant to me. And I didn't catch him. He had died already. I lost track with him, and he died already. Yo, man, I found his son. And I mentored his son, Miguel Cardona, to pay it forward because of what that guy meant to me in my life. And I do it for tons of other people as well. We have a ability to pay it forward. And we have a responsibility to show people what's possible for regular, everyday Latino immigrants like us in this country.
Yeah.
The sky is the limit.
I mean, I was able to message, actually, I don't think I messaged Robert Boyd, and I think he passed away too. I did message Bill Lawrence, African-American recruiter for IBM. I met him at a job fair, and he says, call me back when you graduate next year. And because of him, I got the job. So I got the names of people that put me where I am today.
Absolutely.
And I was able to get him on Instagram once a few years back, 10 years back. And I was like, thank you. And he's, you know, so we had a connection. I was able to catch him.
So important to pay it forward.
So important.
In my life that have made a difference. People like Parsons, people like my brother Trevor Edwards, people that have made a difference, mentored me, sponsored me. Even more important than mentorship is sponsorship because it's public. When somebody puts your name in public, hey man, Elias is amazing in public to people, stands by your name, really, really important. That's critical.
You're teaching me a lesson, right? I'm starting a new company from scratch, and I feel like a lot of people that are inexperienced, they tend to get distracted so much by shiny things, by speaking on a panel, by attending a conference, by being at a dinner. Mm. And so I'm in this mindset where I'm like, unfortunately, because I'm accomplished, and so I get to say no, and I'm saying no because I only want to work. Mm. And so, but you know what? I've been doing that indiscriminately. And I say no to mentorship, and I say no to helping some people because I'm saying I'm heads down. Mm. So you just gave me a good learning lesson moment, right?
Well, man, it's a responsibility. You don't know whose fire you're going to ignite, who's going to take the mantle for us. Mentorship is actually intentional mentorship, but it's also how you show up. There's people watching who are saying, like, man, I want to be like that guy. Look how he shows up. Look how he's present. He's responsible. He's diligent. He's committed. He's educated. He's articulate. They're looking at you and they're saying, I want to be like that guy.
I do that every day. That's not a problem. But and then we're doing this podcast for that, right? I think. But I just said, you just touched me, right? That it's like I have to be intentional to still carve out a little bit of time for Miguel Cardona's son. You know what I mean? Because there's that next generation that needs us.
100%.
I love, we got a continuous conversation, this relationship. You're unbelievable. You must have so many stories. This could be like a 3-hour Joe Rogan style podcast. Give us, what's a little CTA? What's a little call to action to the audience to be like, you know, give us some advice. Give us some wisdom.
Yo, man, call to action, dream big, and then stop with the tomorrow, right? Tomorrow, nah, wait, I don't need more. Let's do it right now. Let's get it done right now. Dream big, or go home. Life is once, literally one time, and it goes by in a second. get it done.
It's never too late. You know, I'm 49. I'm starting a new company, right? This is gonna be a, could be a 10, 20 year journey. And I'm like, let's go.
Let's do it. Absolutely.
Let's do it. Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss when a new episode drops every other Tuesday.